Hello and welcome to Enterprise Linux Security, episode 87. I'm here with Zhao, as always. How you doing?
Hello, Jay. As always, a pleasure being here with you. Today we're covering a story that we somehow missed over this couple of weeks that we were off the air. But yeah, this is another very interesting story. I know that we keep going back to ransomware incidents, but these stories are just too good to be true, and we really need to cover them.
We really do, and it's kind of interesting. While I was, you know, in the Bahamas on vacation, someone mentioned, I'm pretty sure it was this story, like literally on vacation. It was this the last place I would have ever expect to hear about a, some kind of a healthcare risk and in terms of ransomware. But, you know, that's, it's literally that popular of a topic right now that it comes up in casual conversation with a complete stranger. I think we need to cover it. It's all over the news. And we missed the story originally, but we're going to catch up today. And I believe there's been some recent developments here as well. But the moral of the story is, you know, ransomware is bad enough, but it's even worse when healthcare is involved, because there's a lot more at stake at that point, as we'll be talking about.
Yep. So this story has everything. It touches on healthcare, which affects the day-to-day activity of regular people like you and me. It impacts the businesses at the high level. It has drama. It has recurring characters that we've already covered before in the podcast. It has some great twists at the end. And yeah. You probably heard about this in the news. If you're in the US and you try to do something healthcare related, like filling a prescription or going to a doctor appointment or something like that at the end of February, it's very likely that you were either rescheduled or couldn't use our insurance policy to cover it or had to pay full price, the whole thing. And it was all because of this. It was all because Change Healthcare, which is a company that provides services to hospitals, to clinics, to doctors directly, to patients, to pharmacies, they got ransomware on the 21st of February. And this brought down all of their services. And this was a ransomware attack by a group called Black Cat Alpha, which we've mentioned before, so the name shouldn't surprise anybody. And this was so impactful, and it affected so many hospitals and so many players in the healthcare industry, that even the government had to step in. So the US Department of Health and Human Services issued guidance around this time, saying that all the players on the healthcare industry should start accepting paper forms instead of requiring everything go through electronic means, precisely to work around the issues caused by this. And that's massive when you consider an industry as large as healthcare.
I could also ask a question, you know, why is anything reachable via, you know, any kind of network that's having that kind of information in an EMR system? Or I know that's the EMR system is oversimplifying this. I just feel like it's, you know, as we've talked about, it's one thing for a company to, you know, get hit by ransomware. But when the threat actors are going after the sick in order to get paid, okay, that's low even for them. Like, it's already a horrible thing to do. But then that's even, it's like, if there's any indication that there's no honor among thieves, this story, anything healthcare related, will absolutely make that clear.
That quote will prove true in more ways than you imagine further along the story.
Oh boy, yes it will.
So yeah, if you went to a pharmacy and you tried to get your prescription filled, chances were pretty good that you either had to pay full price for the medicines, so that you, because your insurance policy couldn't be verified, or the guys at the pharmacy would have to take pity on you and provide you with the drugs and then have you come back with the prescription later.
And to put this into perspective, just so everyone that isn't in the United States knows roughly what we're dealing with, my ADHD medication is $600 a month.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there. Obviously, some medications are higher, some are lower, but you know, this isn't a small amount of money when we're messing with people's prescriptions. And that's just the financial part, the health risks of being without a prescription, which absolutely can be fatal. We need to underscore that this is a absolutely huge issue with just prescriptions alone, and we haven't even unpacked the story all the way yet.
The actual impact of this, ransomware is ransomware. We know how that happens. Through some vector, and there were mentions of some remote desktop tool being exploited. There were mentions of Active Directory being brute forced. Somehow the ransomware reached the critical systems and it broke down over 100 different systems at Change Healthcare. But the scope of the impact, you don't start to understand the scope of something like this until you realize that for about 3 weeks, most of the healthcare industry in the US was disrupted. When you're talking about critical infrastructure and protecting critical infrastructure from state-sponsored attacks and from third parties, malicious third parties and all of that, this is what you mean. This was an attack that was targeting specifically the healthcare industry, but something similar could happen if it targeted something as simple as, say, for example, the AC units and just pumped them all the way to Hive across the nation. That would kill the power grid or at least make lots of different businesses have to stop working because it would be unbearable to be there. This is a great example of critical infrastructure being hit by an attack. So, Change Healthcare. Long-time listeners of the podcast might recall that we had an episode on how to deal with ransomware a few episodes back. I don't know exactly the number, but we talked about different things.
It was more than a few, but yeah.
My mind wonders. One of the things that we advised people to do was that you should always take your time in making sure that you got every single trace of the infection nailed down and you got the attack vector properly nailed down and fixed and everything addressed before you start bringing up systems. And obviously not because they heard this, but they did the right thing here and they kept their systems down for a huge amount of time and had massive impact to themselves and to other businesses that depend on Change Healthcare. But they kept their systems down for at least 3 weeks to make sure that they were catching everything. And that's the right approach, even if it hurts your business. The last thing that you want to do is start bringing systems up piecemeal, and then halfway through you find out that some other system still has a trace of the ransomware and is infecting everything again. But they did.
And to be clear, losing money is better than being out of business.
And especially in this situation, when you're handling confidential information that touches on patients and doctors, and you don't want to lose this information or make sure it's mishandled. So they did the right thing here, and they kept their systems down for long enough to make sure that everything was caught. And apparently it was, because halfway through March, their systems started to be brought up, and apparently everything is back online again at this time. Now, the damage that they suffered, both to their operations and to their reputation, was pretty significant. And yeah, in a position like they are in the industry, where they affect both upstream and downstream, where they affect the customers and they also affect the service providers, this is really, really massive, and it's tough to underscore this. So let's go a bit through how they handled the situation. They paid the ransom. Let's get this out of the way right now. They paid the ransom. We always advise people not to do that. I actually, half jokingly, in an article that I wrote some time ago, I said that, yeah, probably the only situation where I would be okay with paying the ransom was if you were doing cancer research and you found the cure for cancer and you had no backups and that critical system was ransomed. Yeah, right then I might see you as willing to pay the ransom. They paid the ransom. They paid $22 million in bitcoins. They paid this right at the start of March. That's a massive amount, so much so that it's very likely that this $22 million injection into the Bitcoin exchanges was what made Bitcoin surge past 60K at that precise date. The injection of this amount of money into such a short period of time in the Bitcoin market made the price of Bitcoin surge past 60K right around this time. If you saw that in the news, if you followed the prices of cryptocurrency, this is the reason why it surged when it did. Here is where things start to get interesting. So, Black Hat Alpha is a ransomware as a service provider. Okay, so they provide infrastructure for their affiliates. It wasn't Black Cat directly who ransomed these guys, it was one of the affiliates, but the payment went through Black Cat. So the 22 million in Bitcoin were seen to go to a Black Cat controlled Bitcoin address. And research and know more or less which addresses are used when payments are made, so they know that it was made to that to the same place that other ransoms had been made, and they draw the connections that way. This is where it starts to get interesting. 3 days after the payment was made, someone claiming to be in the affiliate that made the ransom went through one of the several different forums out there that deal in this type of things and started making claims that Black Cat was not giving them the ransom money, was not giving them their cut. At the same time, the page that usually shows Black Cat ransoms with the time to payment, their semi-official website, and I'm using air quotes loosely here, started showing a seizure message as if it had been seized by law enforcement. You know, the typical one that shows the FBI logo and the other intelligence agencies that were involved and police and all of that. But there were a few things that were funny about that page. The HTML wasn't the usual one used in those pages. There were a few mistakes on the text in the page that was shown. And it turns out that law enforcement denied having any relationship with it. There was no operation handling this. There was no attack on Black Cat at the time. So it turns out that Black Cat took the ransom and ran. They put up the fake message. They decided to keep the money to themselves and just, okay, tough luck, it doesn't go to the affiliate. Another interesting thing here, and this is where the no honor among thieves quotes go, is that the affiliate also posted some screenshots, supposedly that they still had information that not only had been encrypted, but had also been exfiltrated from Change Healthcare. And at the time, this is how it stopped. Around start of March, mid-March, things stayed like this. And it has stayed like this until this week, actually, until just a couple of days ago. And yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. And we'll continue with the story here, but I need to get you in the conversation as well. 22 million is quite a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's up there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it's like you. It's such a great overview of the story. I really appreciate that. So, 22 million in Bitcoin. Yes, that's a lot. I can't say that I know much about Bitcoin, to be completely honest. But obviously, I know nothing, and I know that's a lot. I mean, obviously, the word million. So, the fact is, here we no honor among thieves. I mean, that's what we were saying near the beginning of the podcast, and is true here. I mean, it's playing out like a bad Netflix show, but it's actually somewhat entertaining, as much as I hate to admit it, because there's some drama here. But at the very same time, this is horrible that this kind of situation happens to people and that their property is getting, you know, obviously it's software damage, it's still damage, businesses disrupted. Worse, we have the healthcare industry, which is taking care of, you know, sick people. I mean, I've obviously some people have conditions that are worse than others, and it's scary to think that you could be in a hospital bed needing a life-changing procedure, and that at any minute someone who wants Bitcoin can just decide that you don't get to have that procedure, that prescription. And it's obviously the case that healthcare needs to have the strongest security controls, among the strongest, because they're a huge target. Like, everything anybody could ever want to know about anybody is in their medical records. I mean, if you think about how valuable this is, even if you are not doing something illegal and you're just an ad company, even knowing who has cancer, who has this condition or that condition, they know who to sell it to. Obviously, social security numbers, identity theft, addresses, identity theft. You know, probably credit card information is in there too, if they've ever made a payment, the medications they're on can be used. I mean, all of this information, I mean, it's pretty much, as far as I'm aware anyway, just about anything a threat actor would want to know about a person can be found from a medical record. So they're a huge target, and they're hugely important because it's a life or death situation here. So There's not a healthcare industry in the world that doesn't need to bring their absolute A game to security, and that's just a start.
And it has also brought some governmental overview into this story. I mentioned before that the Department of Health and Human Services was involved. There's now also some people in Congress asking for more information about how Change Healthcare is running their security posture, what measures are being put in place to prevent this from happening again, how are they preventing this from happening again, especially with the news that came out this week that the threat actor that apparently kept the information is again ransoming the company not to disclose the information. This came out like 2 days ago, and yeah, Change Healthcare is again being extorted. If they don't pay by Friday, apparently 4 terabytes of information that was stolen at the time will be released to the internet. That's a lot of patient information. That's a lot of drugs that are being prescribed to people. That's a lot of medical history. That's a lot of, exam data that gets leaked out there. And this happened in the past couple of days. Now, the moment that they paid the ransom, for whatever reasons that they believe they should have paid the ransom, they painted a big target on their backs. And now they're being targeted. And yeah, you paid once, you're gonna pay again. And yeah, this is one of the reasons why we always advise not to pay the ransom. You're just telling the threat actors that, yeah, you're a willing victim and you're going to keep complying.
Now, two things that are among things that threat actors really love. They love companies or systems that have been breached before in the past, because think about it. I mean, if a threat actor decides they want to do some damage to something, are they going to A, attack a company that has never been in the news, or B, attack a company who has been in the news for breaches? Because you would think that if a company has had bad security in the past, they could have very well have fixed the problem that the threat actor got in, or whatever they utilized to get in. But security posture is important, because it's often the case if there's one flaw, and there's always one, but if there's something egregious, there's more, right? So they're gonna keep poking around. So they love that. Another thing that threat actors really love is companies that pay ransom. Okay, so I would say if your company is breached, you are a target already before it becomes a point that you paid the Bitcoin or not, because someone successfully got in, it's all over the news. Now, if they do pay the ransom, they're especially enticing to a threat actor, because here you have a company that not only has been breached, they successfully paid the ransom. So you have a precedent set of a company that has security issues and a company that also pays Bitcoin. So you have both of those two things I mentioned in one target. So just being breached alone, you have to really be careful going forward, because they're going to keep looking. Being breached and paying, you better watch your back. You really do. You're really going to have a full system audit. You're going to have to, I would have like a couple different companies do penetration tests. Like, you name the test, they need to do it, period.
There's also something to be said about the concentration of services in a single company and how these guys have their hands on so many different pots that when they fail or when they experience problems, it touches exponentially across many different unrelated companies. The problems that insurance companies had, where they had to file requests arriving in paper form, they no longer had the processes in place or the people in place to deal with the amount of paperwork that suddenly appeared through the door. The same goes for hospitals. Hospitals that are expecting to keep a cash flow are counting on this provider to handle the payment information and to make the necessary arrangements for funds to be transferred from the insurance companies to the hospitals. And they were experiencing serious problems in making ends meet. We always believe that these companies have lots of cash flow around and have lots of money available and all of that. That's not exactly the case. You might have unliquidated assets that you can't exactly turn into money immediately. So while you might have the resources, you don't have the liquidity available at the time that you needed to make payments for your doctors or for new treatments or for new equipment or to handle day-to-day activities like food and repairs. And yeah, And when an operator like this that touches on all these different systems that handle all of these different tasks fails, it cripples the sector. And I don't know the details of the legislation in the US, but shouldn't there be some limits to the amount of things that a single company could handle inside of a different industry? Because this is critical infrastructure at its core. Maybe some separation of concerns here would be useful.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, and I think that's absolutely probably the majority of it. And maybe what I'm about to say is kind of the same thing. There's at least going to be some overlap here, but there's so many aspects to try to make sense of all of this. But essentially, like I said, we have this situation, healthcare systems, and we have the incentive here, and then now the situation becomes, like you said, you know, there's all these policies and procedures, there's things that people can't keep track of anymore because they're, you know, it's already the case when you have paper that it's bigger than the people that can handle it. But even with the Swiss systems, if you look at the IT perspective, if you unpack how this happens, it's kind of like you how you said, there's more work than there's people to do the work. But if you look at technical debt, security debt, you're going to find a lot of this. Now, how does this happen in a big company? I could tell you some of the ways. So if you have a small company, obviously you have fewer servers. It's easier to keep track of. If you're a really small company, you have like two servers. I mean, come on. Like, that's not going to be as hard to keep track of as a big company. But even with a big company, you often don't have the number of people working on it to scale to the systems that need to be supported. You have system administrators that are working overnight. Sometimes they're spread really thin already. Now, when this happens, you have people that can't keep up with the workload. But what does that mean? So someone leaves the company, right? Their user account is left dangling because a system administrator is in over their heads and they just can't get to it. Obviously, you have to manage those things, but we're all human. The more work you have, the more things you're going to miss. So user accounts are dangling now. Then you have situations where an IT person sets up a server and then they move on, or maybe they move positions or something. The server's still there. Nobody remembers what it's for, and it's just sitting there. Now you have servers that aren't accounted for. Then you have different people, like different system administrators coming in and out. They do things his or her own way. And then you have servers that have been there for 10 years that have like several different administrators' flavor of setup on them, and nobody can. And then there's also not documentation as well. So in the systems, you have a company this big, you have a ginormous number of services, like you were saying, and the more moving parts you have, the more possible this is to happen. And we talked about cloud governance, where you have in your cloud provider a system set up to where it looks for things like if someone tries to spin up a server that's publicly available, it's going to freeze it and ask for a manager's approval and not allow that server online because it wasn't approved. Having something like that in place of in front of your cloud environment, if configured correctly, can stop some of these things from happening. But it takes a change control procedure. Often I feel companies lack that. Like they just, this SSH service is down, I'm going to go fix it. But they don't document it, and they don't note or even get approval to make the change. It's working. Nobody knows what they did to fix it. And they don't have a change control procedure to go back to pinpoint a problem to a change being made on the system. There's no version control to their DevOps side of things often. And obviously, none of what I'm saying is specific to Change Healthcare, United Healthcare. And for all I know, it may have nothing to do with anything I just mentioned. But often, I feel like this is where those security vulnerabilities start to stack, is when you have, it's never just one thing. It's never just one patch. It could be, but there's going to be patches missing, this missing. It's just hard to keep track of all this. And when you deal with healthcare, especially, and I will swear to this, especially when you have a company buying other companies, I promise you, in my personal opinion, I've looked at no stats to back this up, but I have a feeling what I'm going to find. If a company is buying other companies, what does that mean? It means that their security risk is bigger. Why? Because they have multiple companies, information systems set up differently, and they're trying to wrangle them under one domain. And then next thing you know, you have this big spider web of a multi-location situation, and nobody even barely knows how it works anymore. And that by the time a threat actor finds it, they're going to have a field day, which is what we're experiencing right now. So you have to put these controls in place. And I feel like controls are the only way, because people might forget. We're human, right? So we need something in place to say, hey, you forgot to check this thing, or this user account's dangling there and hasn't been used in a couple of months. Why is it still open? To have something in place to check these things. But having enough people to manage all these systems, they'd be doing more hiring than I think any company would do just to manage that. They need to have security controls. And it seems to me like, based on what I'm hearing, there might be very well be a missing security control or two.
We're very likely going to see stricter regulation around this. I just hope that...
I'd hope.
Yeah, it's a positive for sure. Again, I'm not against more regulation specifically around cybersecurity, because everybody doing things their own way isn't working that well.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, if people did the right thing all the time and were responsible, then... It's either a law is created for, you know, not a good reason, or it's created because people can't be trusted to do it themselves. And if they're going to hold on to personal information that could be used to steal identity, yeah, put some controls on that. Absolutely.
This incident paired with another one that we discussed a couple of months ago, the Microsoft hack, where some threat actor had infiltrated their email servers and was reading the CEO's emails and the board's emails for quite some time last year. This couple of incidents are drawing attention from government officials in the US. It's very likely that this will lead to more regulation. This isn't just us doing wishful thinking here about stricter regulation. These incidents themselves are the trigger for this. When these players at this level start having cybersecurity problems, then it's critical infrastructure, then it's everything that's built on top of them that's at risk, and then the government takes notice and starts doing something about it. And in this case, this is likely going to lead to that.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely that. It's... the problem is getting bigger and bigger, and I feel like in general the industry isn't answering it. The security or the threat actors are more than answering the call. Okay, they're not slacking here. Okay, they're none of them. They're doing their thing, but companies are just pushing out service after service, server after server, and trying to scale to meet the demand of competition. And they're scaling faster than their own IT team can keep up with the systems. It's going to be a constant problem, but we do need something, because the way I look at it, and to your point, I don't like to have more legislation. Okay. I'm not a fan of having a ton of legislation, but the way I look at it, businesses had their chance. We gave them a chance. We gave them a chance to have no legislation. We gave them a chance to do the right thing. They've proven that they can't. And our social security numbers are in the hands of people that are not responsible enough to safeguard them properly. So unfortunately, I have to say, let's put some legislation on it, because they clearly can't be trusted to do it themselves if they have lax security procedures. If a company is all about profit and not securing their system, then they're negligent, in my opinion.
So United Health is the parent company of Change Healthcare. 3 days ago, they came out and said that they were expecting this incident with Change Healthcare to not be as impactful as they were initially assessing. So they were expecting it to cost them around $1.6 billion during this year. That's a staggering amount of money, a staggering amount of losses.
That's a lot of money. What did they think it was going to be if it was less?
This was expected. They expected more than this. So, yeah. And just as if they were asking for it, the day after, then the threat actor came out with, yeah, we have information, you need to pay us another amount in ransom, or we will disclose this information. Those 4 terabytes that I mentioned before. The chain of events was like that. The parent company was bragging that this wasn't as bad as they had claimed, and then here you go. Now there's another ransom payment that you need to make. So the story is far from over for them.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were my health insurance provider at one point in the past, so I might have to actually look into this. Oh my gosh. Hopefully none of my information was on there, because I hope I'm wrong on that, but I guess we'll see. If you've had business with them, you should be
looking
into
it. Even if they weren't your insurer, the insurance information to your insurer might have flown through their systems. So yeah, they handled that. All the claims that you filed drugs that you tried to get under your insurance plan, all of that information passed through their systems. So your data, if you used any of that in the, I don't know how long, is likely on the leak. So yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. In the United States, at least, if you owe a healthcare company even as little as $10, they are on you like crazy. But the minute they owe you something or we need an answer about our data, they're not as quick to respond. Imagine that.
That's not just specific to the U.S.
No, I'm sure it's not. But I feel like at least it's my only worldview anyway.
So. This was a double-pronged attack. It wasn't just a ransomware, it was also data exfiltration. We've covered both of these situations in the past. But the fallout from this is going to continue to be felt. It's not just the information that gets leaked if they don't pay, and it's very likely that they'll pay again. They don't need any more fallout from this. They don't need any more bad press around this. The last thing that United Health and Change Healthcare wants is to continue to be in the news. So if the information gets leaked on Friday, all of next week is going to be talking about how cybersecurity is lacking, how the healthcare industry is failing, how Change Healthcare is not trustworthy, and other companies are going to start looking for alternatives, and they are going to start to divest their investments in Change Healthcare and start looking for alternatives. So that's the last thing that Change Healthcare wants to do. Just as they were trying to address the initial problem and they were trying to contain it and see, trying to reduce the amount of damage that it was causing their stocks and all of that, now they're back into it again. And it just shows again and again, as if we needed to have this repetition over and over again, how much cybersecurity is a core concern, how much you should put your cybersecurity posture into play and at the forefront of all of your IT acquisitions and purchases and basically any decision that you do in IT, precisely because you'd want to avoid this happening to your business. If you, off the bat, no system is 100% secure, you'll never get that, but you need to get as close to it as possible. Don't cut corners on this. Don't try to penny pinch every purchase decision around this. Get the tools that you need. Get the skills that you need in your team. If you have to pay them, yeah, you're going to have to pay them, but is it less than what it would cost you otherwise? Change Healthcare has some information for that, for you about that.
I wanted to address something in the chat room. Somebody mentioned whitelists. And earlier I brought up cloud governance, which is kind of like a whitelist. They're two different things, but they're kind of similar. So cloud governance is specifically your cloud provider, Azure, AWS, whatever it happens to be. And having that layer kind of like a guard that says you shall not pass unless you meet these requirements for anything set up. A whitelist is a little bit more egregious because, in my opinion, and by egregious, I don't mean bad. I mean, it's more to maintain, because with a whitelist, you have domain computers that can't have anything installed or anything changed without something being approved. And that's a really good thing, because if you could get that enabled and implemented, that will absolutely benefit your security. But the problem is culture. That's what usually breaks the whitelist thing, unfortunately. It really depends on who's at the top. Every time I tried to implement this in previous companies that I worked at, it was pretty much universally seen as a good idea. So buy-in was not really a problem. But what was a problem is in practice. So for example, you have a graphics designer at this company who's the only one there using a Mac. And of course, me knowing Mac, of course, I'm always the one that helps him out. Great guy, I don't mind it. But the problem was, in his profession, he needs a utility for this, a utility for that. So he, you know, there's this freeware utility or this $10 app on the Apple Market or store, whatever it's called, that an app he downloads for this and that. So it seems like every day I'm installing something, and that's just one person. And then you get the managers that say, well, we have to get approval to install things, and it's slowing down progress. So we really need to have an exclusion for this person because this person needs to work fast. And then that person gets an exception. And then that person gets an exception. And then management finds out that there's exceptions. Now this manager wants an exception to the policy. Next thing you know, you end up with this hodgepodge of a half-implemented whitelist solution just because people hate it. But if management is on board with it and they'll back you and they'll defend it, then it's fine. It's just that sometimes you get, if you have a management team that is, you know, kind of anti-tech as some of them are, those are the kinds of people I think are probably going to try to defeat that. I just mention it because I feel like whitelists are going to be a topic that's going to get a lot more common this year. I really do think that's the case. So if you can get it implemented, I like it. I personally like it. Some people have different opinions on it, but if you can get that implemented, that'd be pretty cool. Just make sure you do some talking or some conversations around the office just so you fully understand what that might look like before you do it.
Another point that was raised in the chat was AI taking programming jobs and more skilled developers out of work, and then some of them would eventually turn into ransomware creators. That's actually a serious concern. That's not just fear-mongering, or we see all the layoffs that are happening in big tech and have happened since the beginning of the year. All those persons that are highly skilled, that have been working inside of these companies and know their infrastructure front to back, are now out of a job. That's a security concern for the companies, and they have to keep paying their bills. They have to keep putting food on the table. And if they can't get a job elsewhere because everybody is downsizing, they still have to pay the bills. They still have to put food on the table. While I really can't imagine the situation where your day activity is creating ransomware or being a threat actor or something like that, and I've mentioned this in a past episode, I obviously know that that's not the case for everybody, and people are doing this activity and there's a whole economy of scale around this, and there are threat actors that are out there recruiting anyone that is able to code, and especially at this level. So yeah, that is a concern. That is a security concern too, not just an economic concern, not just a jobs concern. This is a cybersecurity concern for sure.
It really is. I mean, I feel like the AI thing, there's more to unpack that we haven't really formulated yet. I'm not talking about us. I mean, the industry in general, because it's kind of like when CDs came out, it's like, oh, they're good for music, but what else can we use them for? And somebody had the idea of a data disk or a this or that. A new technology comes out, we don't know how it's going to impact us. When it comes to AI, part of me just wonders the inherent flaw being that it's ingesting information from a knowingly flawed species that itself can only be flawed. I just see AI as maybe taking jobs, but crashing at some point when people realize it's not really working as well as they thought it would. But it is a real problem right now, regardless of where it's going. I do agree with that. It's just going to be interesting to see where that goes, because I think we're only getting started in AI. And I'm not one to jump on a bad bandwagon. Let the record indicate that.
Actually, on AI, I actually jumped on the bandwagon pretty early last year, and I bought into all the hype at the time. And to some extent, we're seeing the effects of AI. It was at the time, but it's growing right now. In the speed with which code gets created, even if it's not high quality, but just the amount of new code that gets released and the amount of new ransomware that gets released and the variations thereof. And even social engineering attacks like voice changes through AI and all of that. That is a real threat also. That is something that is growing, and as more and more services spun up around that, you'll see more and more of that. There was some hype. Some people are claiming it's a bubble and it will eventually burst, as all do. I don't know. It's starting to get as much money in it that it just becomes so large that it becomes too big to fail. So even if AI fails it right now, the damage is done, and not the large language models that you can download into your own systems and run locally and all of that, that's not going away. So yeah, we'll need to continue handling that in the future, regardless of how successful AI is overall or not.
I do feel similarly that it's possible that AI is just a thing that's just going to die off, and it's possible it's a trend, but even if it is a trend, it's going to stick around. We just don't know in what way. So even if it did completely die off and everyone hated it, which isn't going to happen, but let's just entertain that thought, threat actors are always going to love it, period. Like threat actors have already decided, I'm sure. And any tool that they can use can and will be used for their goals, period. It doesn't matter if the industry takes to it or not. I do feel that the future of cybersecurity will be fought AI against AI, period. Even if AI fails the industry, cybersecurity is going to need to use it. There's already a person asking about it in the chat room. And threat actors are going to absolutely use it to ramp up their efforts. And it's going to come a point where the security industry cannot, like it's actually impossible to deal with threat actors by themselves without themselves also using AI. As much as I hate to say that, I do feel like that's the future of how cybersecurity is going to be fought. But I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see.
The way the threat actors are using AI right now, and this was the question in the chat specifically, is that, for example, on open source software, for example, they can feed an AI chatbot, a code chatbot, they can feed the code on a given commit and asking it to find any flaws around it or find any security problems with it. And it will be faster and it will be sometimes more precise than just a human going through the code and trying to find that by hand. If you feed it a change of the Linux kernel, for example, which is very, very long and it's really tricky to do by hand, it will immediately flag you the critical regions and it will immediately draw your attention to the points where you should focus your attention if you're trying to write code to exploit that new code that gets introduced. That's one of the ways that it's being used. Another one is obviously on the phishing emails that got much more sophisticated since the chatbots appeared, since ChatGPT was a thing. The phishing emails started having less typos, started sounding more like English. You no longer just read a piece of text and immediately saw that, yeah, this is being sent by somebody who has never written a sentence in English in their lives. Voice impersonation is a thing. Just last week or a couple of weeks ago, a secretary at the company made a bank transfer to a different account because it received a phone call from somebody claiming to be her boss and she didn't realize that it wasn't. The voice was the same. They were impersonating the voice of her boss, asking her to do the transference, and she did. And it was malicious. And yeah. Those are the things that are currently being used. If you haven't yet taken a look at the new tools around video AI, do so. There are some amazing examples, and it's really easy to see that as the new source for deepfakes, as if we needed more. But these ones will be terrific, and it will be really hard to spot them and claiming they are fake. Lots of scary things around the way that AI can be abused and the way that AI is already being abused.
And there was an entire Law and Order episode that was about this. So when it hits Law and Order, you know it's real. Okay, once it hits Law and Order, it's a legit thing. So I contend to that. I think we covered what's happened, and I kind of feel like this is an ongoing thing, and we're going to have more to talk about, I'm sure. There could even be more happening right now, and there probably is as we speak. So I think there were some news articles you wanted to talk about, wasn't there? A few that we had?
News articles around the story around Change Healthcare. But just keep in mind that the payment deadline for the data exfiltration is this Friday, so probably next week we'll know if they paid the ransom or not. Or if everybody has access to personal information available for free on the internet, as the ransomware operator claims to do if the payment is not made.
There you go. We'll definitely have some updates to talk about. We'll know if it did or didn't happen, at least.
Thanks, everybody who joined. As always, it was a pleasure. And until the next one. Bye.